couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Nobody, Into the Dark, Blood Moon, Violation, and the TV series The Irregulars and Solar Opposites Season 2. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, and the home cinema roundup featuring the Oscar-nominated Promising Young Woman. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The big news that happened this week is a bunch of release date changes and alterations in the schedule. The big ones were an announcement from Disney. I've been telling people, look at Black Widow as the leader as what's going to happen this summer. I said if Black Widow keeps its May release date and goes straight to theaters, then we're really getting back to normal. If not, we might have a little bit more time here. And as expected, Black Widow was shifted to a July release, and it's going to be premiering in theaters and on Disney Plus or Premium. Same thing's happening with Cruella, which is going in theaters and on Disney Plus Premium. And Luca, which is the new Pixar movie, is going directly to Disney Plus, much the way that Soul did. Now, part of the reason I think that you're seeing Black Widow finally just making this plunge is Disney needs to get the Marvel Universe rolling again. And they kicked it off with WandaVision earlier this year, and now they've got Falcon and the Winter Soldier, and they've got things steaming along on Disney Plus to seed the theatricals, and they can't wait any longer. There's been over a year since an MCU release. I mean, it's, I think it'll have been 2 years between Marvel Cinematic Universe's release dates for their major motion pictures. And that's a long time to kind of keep people interested, especially when Marvel's used to dropping 2 or 3 movies a year. They're seeding these releases with Falcon and the Winter Soldiers, and they've already done it with WandaVision. They've got a Loki series coming out this summer, so they can't lose this momentum. And that's why they didn't want to delay Black Widow any longer. At least that's how I see it. Now, we'll see how this rolls out through the rest of the year, because there's a bunch of stuff still coming out because it all kind of backed up. You've got Shang-Chi and The Legend of the Ten Rings. That's coming out in September right now. And Eternals coming out November 5th. And you've got Spider-Man No Way Home coming out December 17th, a week before Christmas. Will they keep that schedule? They might. It'll depend on how Black Widow does. I think it's going to be interesting to see how Black Widow plays in the Disney premiere, because there's an immediacy to the Marvel Universe. You want to see it before you get things spoiled. And of course, it's going to lead into other movies like Shang-Chi and Eternals going forward. By the time Black Widow is going to be available on the Disney Plus service just for free, you're looking at backing it up against Eternals. So you're going to want to see people do it. They tested with Ryan the Last Dragon, which was not a franchise film, and they tried it with Mulan, which stumbled a little bit, but you know, they still got plenty of people watching it on Disney Plus, and at $30 a pop, they get to keep all of that, as opposed to having to split the cost with theaters. And I think that Disney's eager to get them all the way back in the theaters, but they now have a platform that works. And they're going to try and get it if it's going to be servicing these two communities, the people who want to stay at home and the people who want to go to the theaters. Now, there's other movies that are showing up. There's a Guy Ritchie movie coming out in May. And also in one of the famous ones that got moved was that Saw movie, Spiral. That was one that they had moved back and forth, the one with Chris Rock and Samuel L. Jackson. Well, that's actually moved up ahead. It's like May 14th now. And that's going exclusively to theaters. But here's the thing. Don't expect things to go back 100% even in May. I think we still have to ride through the summer, because there's going to be a surge in April after spring breaks and Easter. And there's probably going to be a surge this summer. I mean, until the 70% of the population is vaccinated and we can really start to get this thing behind us, we're still going to be dealing with social distancing and limited seating. But here's the thing. If you want this stuff to come back quicker, Just don't be a jerk about it. Respect those around you. Wear your mask. Follow the rules. Be diligent. Be over-diligent in following the rules. Don't flaunt not wearing a mask. Just wear a mask. And we are so close to getting through this. As long as we stay united in diligence, and vaccinations are rolling through. I mean, I'm half vaccinated myself. I've got another one coming up in April, and then I'm going to be good to go in May. They're not talking about it, but I think there's also a focus on kids. Now, they're talking about it for the new school year, but in terms of movies, kids drive the marketplace. The younger audience drives the marketplace. You've got two things. You've got families, and you've got like that teenage crowd that really builds on Friday and Saturday. And for those big, huge, mega releases, you need everybody in the theaters. So that's where the focus in the vaccinations, when they're able to start vaccinating kids, which from everything I've read, it's like earliest maybe July, but probably August, September, because they're getting ready for the school year for 21/22. By that time, you will be able to have people can freely go to theaters and congregate in large groups without those spacing and limited restrictions. So I think by September, you know, by the next releases for Marvel, I mean, if you look at the Marvel releases, they're kind of set up to be at the next milestones along the way, where September 3rd, which is the release of Shang-Chi, that is going to be when we're really vaccinating kids. You're going to kind of have the big wave of that done by Eternals and hopefully everything back to normal by December. So there's still a lot of dealing with this through the year. But the good news is there's a light at the end of the tunnel and we're approaching it. Just don't knock the tunnel down in the process, please. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That song means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit is The Nevers, which premieres on HBO on April 11th.
3 years ago, everyone at The Touched woke up. With a power.
The Touched are rewriting the rules of reality. I want them under control.
Is that the mission you were going on about?
Yes. I do have a mission. And I'm not cut out for it. But it matters.
There's a harmony to our world that's worth preserving.
Touched are not a threat, yet you seem determined to prove that they are.
Being a HBO show, it's going to, of course, also go to HBO Max. So for those of you who took the plunge for the Warner Brothers opportunities, you now have access to The Nevers. So you've all the access to the new HBO shows. You know, they air at a certain time on HBO, which is April 11th. And then they'll be able to be on demand for the duration following it. Now, this one looks interesting because it looks like it's sort of a historical look at what superheroes could have been. Apparently, Joss Whedon was involved in developing this show, which is he became such a persona non grata that they, I think, stripped him away. They Zack Snydered him on this one. But you can see his influences even just in the trailer. There's a lot of stuff that I've seen that take place in this sort of Victorian era. We're going to actually be talking about one of those shows later in the program. But this looks like it's got some interesting stuff going on. So I'm looking forward to talking about it in a couple weeks. The next one I want to hit is Stowaway on Netflix on April 22nd.
Hi, Michael. I'm Marina Barnett, the commander of the ship. Do you remember what happened on the pad?
How long was I out?
We took off about 12 hours ago.
12 hours? I need to get back to my sister, please. My sister, she's alone. Please, I gotta get back.
We're not going back.
What do you mean we're not going back? This is a 2-year mission.
There's no easy way to say this. Life support is damaged permanently. We only have enough oxygen board for 3 people.
This is one in a line of a series of movies that they've been putting on Netflix that are basically very heavily into space exploration. On a normal theatrical release schedule, you'd get one or two of these a year if you're lucky. You know, something like Interstellar or Ad Astra, but there have been a bunch of them in the last couple of years on Netflix. For better or for worse, they may not have been great movies. You know, something like the Cloverfield Paradox, which I liked, but nobody else seemed to. But even something like Midnight Sky from just this last year. There have been a couple other movies that take place on space stations that we've seen recently, and I love these kind of movies, so I'm curious to see about this one. It's got a good cast. You know, Anna Kendrick, you've got Toni Collette in it. It looks like it's what would have been a major release, but it's being put on Netflix. So I'm looking forward to Stowaway. That's one that's caught my eye. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Into the Dark, Blood Moon, and Violation. Because we can! guys at the movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with a couple ones that are strictly on streaming services. The first one is Into the Dark, Blood Moon. A woman is traveling with her son on the run from the past with a violent secret about her child.
You new in town?
If you're looking for a friend, you know where to find me.
We do things our own way. You have to have rules. If anything happened to me, there'd be no one to look after you.
I love you.
My boy's sick.
Something's been off since you moved in town.
I have to protect you.
Seems bodies follow you wherever you go.
Mom, think I'd ever hurt you?
Not on purpose.
This is part of the Into the Dark series, which is run by Blumhouse. I love Blumhouse. Not all their movies. Some of their movies are crap. They do good and bad. But the reason I have such great respect for Blumhouse is because they basically are following the Friday the 13th model. Back in the 70s and into the 80s, people found out that these thrillers, these horror movies, you don't need to spend a whole lot of money on them. And Friday the 13th really galvanized that in movies because they'd spend like $1 million or $2 million on a movie and they became wildly successful. They make $30 million, but their $30 million return on a $2 million budget is phenomenal. And actually, I was reading an article once that was talking about how Blumhouse actually has the greatest record for being the most profitable studio on the, or at least in America, in Hollywood. Because Blumhouse keeps its budget down and it'll do a movie for less than $5 million. And so even if it only makes 30 or 40, that's a huge hit. And so Blumhouse had teamed with Hulu a couple years ago for this series called Into the Dark. And what they'd do is they'd put out a movie a month. And it was always a smaller, intimate, you know, lower budget film, but it had people associated with it. I remember there was one I talked about last year with Judy Greer. It was a dog thing. It was on Pet Appreciation Month. This one is Blood Moon, and it's the end of their second season. You know, the season, of course, is long, and you know, because it's a season of movies rather than even an anthology series. But that's basically how it plays. It plays like an anthology series with a new movie every so often. This one is, it's predictable. I'm going to say that. You know, you watch this movie, you know everything that's going to happen. And that's because, you know, look, I'm going to be really cagey about this, no pun intended, but I'm going to be delicate on how I say certain things because it's so easy to engage in spoilers. I mean, you watch the trailer, you can figure it out. You know what the catch is. You know what the shocker is and the surprises are. And you can guess most things that are going to happen and why they're happening. And that's probably the worst thing about the movie because outside of its just innate predictability, it's effectively well done. You know, it's about this woman. She's on the run with her son. You know something weird's going on. You can totally guess what it is. And she's trying to hide her son and protect her son. But there's this sinister background to it. And that makes it really interesting to watch because you're watching it play out. And you know that you see these things, you know, what's the Chekhov line? You know, you can't hang a gun on the wall without using it by act three or something like that. And this is putting guns on all these different walls. Every scene is a new gun on a wall. And you're like, well, this is all going to come to a head and not in a good way. And it really poses that question of the parenting struggle. What do you do with your kid? What do you do if your kid's more powerful than you? What if you do with your kid can be a danger to him or herself? And how do you handle that? And when does that stop being you protecting them and fall into the realm of child abuse? And does that actually happen? And do you have to make allowances for that? I mean, it's done in a sort of fantastical way that is in itself not realistic, but it poses those questions, which is, I think, what makes it an interesting movie. Like I said, the acting's fine in it. It's a small set of people involved. But it's fun. If you're a fan of horror, it works for what it is. So I'm going to have to say it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next movie I want to talk about is Violation. A woman takes revenge after an incident in a secluded cabin with her sister and brother-in-law.
I miss you.
Do you?
Yeah, I miss what we used to be like.
That's when Dad started calling you my white knight.
Brainwashed her.
She just doesn't do everything you say anymore.
I have to tell you something and I don't want you to freak out.
Why would I freak out?
It's about Dylan.
Okay.
Don't get angry.
You've
created a reality that is completely different from everyone else's. Where you're this saint who gets tricked into doing bad things.
This is on the Shudder streaming service, and I've talked about Shudder recently. I've been paying a lot of attention to Shudder because I think Shudder has some great horror movies. And, you know, we're halfway to Halloween almost. I mean, we're approaching April. Shudder's having an event in April calling it Halfway to Halloween. So all the stuff in April on Shudder is going to be Halloween oriented, and I love Halloween. And Violation is sort of their last release before we hit the Halfway to Halloween part. But I like horror movies. I think they're interesting. They tackle some real human issues in a fantastical setting, but they also put stuff up there that's very realistic and a what-would-you-do type situation. Violation is one of those latter movies. It did very well in the festival circuit, and I'm going to warn you right now, it is graphic. It is graphic sexually, and it is graphic violence-wise. Maybe not violence-wise, but gore-wise. So the things that happen are not for the weak of stomach, we'll say. And it takes a long time to get to that point. But those points do happen in the movie. I mean, it's no Serbian film, but it is uncomfortable. The whole point of it is that it's about this woman and she's losing her relationship with her husband and she's trying to reconnect with her sister and her brother-in-law. They all meet at this cabin. And let's just say that there is a indiscretion that happens, that the way they present it, you're still unsure about who you're believing, what's going on. It's a real interesting movie to watch next to Promising Young Woman, which I'm going to talk about in the Home Cinema Roundup section, because they deal with very similar connective tissue. But the thing that's kind of brilliant about how they do Violation is it's sort of this antithesis of it, of a revenge film. You watch it and you say, okay, I can see where this happened a certain way to one person, but to another person, you know, just completely stepping back and taking any sort of gender politics out of it and looking and saying, I can see where it was misconstrued or misunderstood, or it appeared very differently to somebody else, which realistically is what happens when you have a lot of arguments and fights. It's two different people have two different perspectives. And these two different perspectives fuel the problem. And then as more and more is revealed, you learn this person has a propensity for exaggeration, for narcissism. Everything's always seems to be about themselves. So it's one of those things where you don't immediately feel sympathy, but sometimes you feel bad for the person because you think, are they completely with it? You wonder about mental illness with this. And all this stuff is done without being said. And it also shows, have you ever been in a situation when you know you're doing something wrong, but you've already started doing it and you just finish it? And that's the core of this, that uncomfortable push through. It's not for everybody. And like I said, it's quite graphic at times, but I gotta say, it's a shocking and chilling movie. And it's worth seeing if you've got the right constitution, we'll say. So I'm going to say Violation kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Nobody and The Irregulars. To Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews. And it's only now that I look at the list of movies I'm talking about and I realize this is a dark week for movies. I mean, the last two movies I talked about were horror movies and family things and unpleasantness. And then I'm looking ahead and it's all a lot of murky darkness. I don't know what's happening this spring. We're going to have things a little bit lighter next week with Godzilla versus Kong, even though that's going to be violent. It's going to be a little more fun. But this week, we've got some pretty heavy stuff. One of them, and this is the big release, it's the big one in theaters, and that is Nobody. Bob Odenkirk stars as a mild-mannered suburban husband who is flung back into a world of danger when he reaches the end of his rope.
For 12 years, I worked for some very dangerous people. I used to be what they call an auditor. The last guy anyone wants to see at their door. but I left it behind to start a family.
Hey!
I might have overcorrected.
When you left, you abandoned a certain debt that needs repayment. And your creditor is the winner of your resurrection.
Most people recognize Bob Odenkirk from Better Call Saul. Of course, he came out of that from being a small part in Breaking Bad. I go back with Bob Odenkirk watching him when he was on Mr. Show back in the 90s on HBO. He and David Cross did a whole sketch comedy. And that's one of the things with Odenkirk. He can do serious and he can do very funny. He's kind of like Ricky Gervais in that sense. He's sort of this American Ricky Gervais that actually has some real acting chops, but he's not strictly limited to one of the masks, a comedy or tragedy. He can kind of do both. And so he's been on my radar for a long time, and I love the fact that he's getting some notice, and that's because of Better Call Saul, but I mean, gosh, I've seen him in stuff going back decades. But the thing with Bob Odenkirk is he is very much that nondescript everyman, and that's why he plays this part of the nobody. He's just this guy who lives in this house with his family, and his wife and he aren't getting along, and they're probably on the road to divorce, and his kids don't respect him, and his teenage son thinks he's a kind of a pathetic loser, and he works at his sister's family's business, and his father-in-law and brothers-in-law take advantage of him and make fun of him all the time. He's kind of emasculated by everybody he knows. But there's a dark past to him. Like I said, everything's dark in this episode. And this is a catharsis movie. It's done in the same vein as John Wick. A lot of people compare it to John Wick, and I think we even have producing people who are involved in both productions. The difference is John Wick is a full-blown action movie where he's pulled back into this world of assassination when he had left in order to get a normal life. This one, he has a past that has brought him back. And it's him because he just kind of reached his breaking point and being frustrated with the world. And he just wants that excuse to unleash the horrible things that he's able to unleash. What's interesting is Bob Odenkirk and Keanu Reeves are 2 years apart in age. Bob Odenkirk's 2 years older than him. I didn't realize that until I looked it up before I did the show today. And I'm surprised because I feel like these are two generationally different movies. Keanu Reeves' John Wick movies are the more overt action for 30-year-olds and young 40-year-olds. Nobody is more for the people in their late 40s and their 50s when they're really hitting the strides of middle-aged and realizing they can't do what they used to be able to do. And you do want to capture that past. And you wish you could go completely crazy and off the train with insanity like nobody does, but it's handled in a very different way. It's not just overt action the way John Wick is. It turns into just a run and gun piece, and it's very well done. The Nobody movie is more about a guy suffering from a midlife crisis. Instead of buying a sports car, he beats up a bunch of Russian thugs on a bus. And of course, he's brought into something even bigger. He stumbles into something terrible. But it's a lot of fun. I mean, I can't say that there's a whole lot of redeeming value to these movies because it is just a get your frustrations out by watching somebody kick tail on a movie screen or a TV screen. Well, right now you can only see it in the movies right now. It's exclusively in theaters, but it'll make you feel better. I don't know if it's a good movie. I mean, it's enjoyable and I can certainly relate to the characters. And I think Odenkirk does a lot with his understated performance. So it's great to see him getting a role like this. I mean, there's a whole thing with these actors who get these roles right before they turn 60. And then they turn into, you know, Liam Neeson, who's pushing 70, who's like, oh my God, I need to drive everywhere instead of punch wolves and stuff like that. But still, Nobody's a great movie. A lot of fun. It's cathartic. It'll have some things to keep you guessing, even though it is ultimately predictable. But overall, I really enjoyed the heck out of that. I'm going to say it rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about The Irregulars. A group of misfit teenagers in Victorian London find themselves helping Dr. Watson to solve mysteries with the paranormal bent to them.
My business partner and I have been watching you from our apartment on Baker Street. Your sister has a gift. She can see things normal people cannot.
That's the doctor's name.
John.
John Watson. He knows much more than what he's telling us.
Some strange things have been happening recently.
221B Baker Street. Sherlock Holmes. What do you think happened to him?
Sherlock Holmes doesn't exist anymore.
This is on Netflix, and it's interesting because this is the second property in the course of a year that takes a spin at Sherlock Holmes. Can't remember what time last year, but it was sometime in the middle of 2020. Netflix released Enola Holmes, which starred Millie Bobby Brown, and it had Henry Cavill playing Sherlock Holmes. And Netflix was famously sued by the Sir Arthur Conan Doyle estate for copyright infringement because they said they used this element of Sherlock Holmes being a nice guy and friends with Watson, which wasn't developed until these later stories that Conan Doyle had written that haven't quite slipped into public domain yet. They're going to slip into public domain in the next couple of years. And what's interesting is I knew that going into The Irregulars, and The Irregulars, it's not about Sherlock Holmes and Dr. Watson. They're very minor characters, especially in the first couple episodes. It's about these street urchins. It's like Oliver with some paranormal elements to it, only they work with Dr. Watson. And Dr. Watson comes in, points him in the right direction, and tells him to do stuff, but they don't like him, and he's an acerbic character. And when they run into Sherlock Holmes is an absolute dumpster fire of a mess. And I'm not surprised, because the last thing they do in this series is make Sherlock Holmes an appealing character, because that's what got them in trouble with Enola Holmes. So I think they double down on the acerbic and unpleasant nature of not just Sherlock Holmes, but his relationship with Dr. Watson, and even Dr. Watson as a character. But really, it's more about the kids. And they've opened up themselves to this paranormal element. And it's like if the Hound of Baskerville were actually a werewolf, rather than having a real explanation behind it, which is in the original story. Although it kind of creates its own stories in itself. Netflix is very versed in putting stuff up that's for a teen audience. And they do a lot of stuff that the younger crowds will really sort of gravitate towards, more than Amazon Prime and Hulu, although they have their own programming that caters to a younger audience. But Netflix, they do their own slate of what I would consider kind of WB programming. And this falls in that. Now, I'm a little outside of the age limit for this. I'm much closer to nobody than I am to The Irregulars in age. And while I can appreciate the interaction between the teenagers, it's a little bit wearing on me as I watch the show. I'm much more interested in the mysteries and the craziness that's going on. But obviously, like I said, I'm not the target market. So The Irregulars is more for the kids. If you're watching Riverdale, you're probably going to watch something like this as well. And I think it's going to click with the kids. I say that. Now I sound as old as you possibly can when I say that. And it has just enough of that thread to Sherlock Holmes to tie a rope to something popular and well-known, but to give people their own adventure. So I'm going to have to say The Regulars kind of rock.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Solar Opposite Season 2 and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring Promising Young Woman. Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the reviews and talk about a new television series or a new season to a television series, and that is Solar Opposites Season 2. In Hulu's adult-oriented animated comedy, a family of aliens tries to blend into suburbia while also preparing to complete their mission to overtake Earth.
Hey, we're still trapped on Earth!
This puts us right back to where we were a year ago!
Oh my God, make a bigger deal about it.
I'm just glad everything is back to normal.
It's a Schlorpian distress call. We have to help them.
Looks like the Solar Opposites are going to London!
What could go wrong?
The Solar Opposites are going to jail!
How are we still so bad at this?
I don't want to point fingers at the weak link here.
This is gonna be awesome! We're in the big city! You can be anything you want out here. Superhero, politician, orthodontist.
Play. I covered Solar Opposites Season 1 last year, and, well, it has a lot of the same people working on it that did Rick and Morty. This is show run by Justin Roiland, and he, of course, plays, does Rick and Morty on Rick and Morty, and it's his own twisted version. It doesn't have Dan Harmon involved, and so it's not exactly the same group, but you have the same level of humor. I guess you could say it's less geared towards stoners than Rick and Morty. Not that Rick and Morty is a stoner show. It's just, it's a show that I think stoners gravitate towards, if that makes sense. But Solar Opposites is different. Solar Opposites takes the science fiction and goes full force. It's not as much joking about people being involved in science fiction, which is really sort of that hyper meta joke that Rick and Morty is. This is more about an actual TV family, but they're aliens, and not in the way that Mork from Ork or Alf was. To use a Seth MacFarlane reference, it's a Family Guy or an American Dad show. It's just that they're aliens. So while it seems to exist in this weird universe between the Seth MacFarlane stuff and the traditional Rick and Morty, because it's trying to be a little more grounded as a sitcom family, and it's them getting into scrapes from episode to episode. I watched that first season, not having watched much Rick and Morty. I think I'd seen an episode or two. And then I went back and I watched the whole four seasons of Rick and Morty, and now I went back now and watched Solar Opposites season two. And you get a different perspective if you have the background of Rick and Morty as something that exists in this universe. And in the Solar Opposites, they play around with a lot of the same things. They play around with the meta reality of it, where they start referring to themselves as the characters in a TV show. There's an awareness to it. And for those fans out there, there are people who've seen it. There's the wall of shrunken people that became kind of this C storyline that took over the show last season. They get some more stuff. They nod to him a couple episodes, but it gets its own episode. The Wall gets its own episode, which I'm not a huge fan of The Wall. That's not where I think the meat and bones of this thing is. I think the meat and bones of this is the deconstruction of the family sitcom. And in a way, the deconstruction of the adult family sitcom, stuff like Family Guy or even The Simpsons, going back to the time when, I mean, now people think that Simpsons is child play, but I remember in the 90s, everyone's like, Bart Simpson is not supposed to be watched by children, you know, and now kids buy The Simpsons. It's on Disney Plus, for crying out loud. But this is a funny show. And it's out there. It's weirdly not, even though it has aliens, it's weirdly not as out there as Rick and Morty, but that's okay. Now, I appreciate the fact that they're not trying to duplicate Rick and Morty. And in the process, because they're aliens and they have the scientific technology, the methods by which they do them, it's very easy to duplicate the stories and the ideas and the concepts, but they kind of go out of their way to not. And I really do appreciate that, because it feels like it does exist as its own show and isn't a second one. And then, of course, it has plenty of reflection on the way the world is. So it's a fun little series, not for kids at all. I had to struggle to get that trailer to not have any curse words in it, for crying out loud. So, you know, it's violent and gory and disgusting and raunchy and sexually explicit. So don't let the kids watch this one, folks. But if you like the first season, you're going to like this one. Season two totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. Today's spotlight is on Promising Young Woman. A woman stalks men in bars by pretending to be fall down drunk in order to turn the tables on them when they try to take advantage of her.
Every week, I go to a club. I act like I'm too drunk to stand. And every week, a nice guy comes over to see if I'm okay.
You okay?
You are so pretty. I am a nice guy.
Are you?
I thought we had a connection.
Okay. How old am I? What are my hobbies? What's my name?
Promising Young Woman is one of those very surprising films that really caught on. And it is nominated for 5 Academy Awards, 4 of the big Academy Award nominations. It's nominated for Best Film Editing, but that's not the one everybody cares about. But it's up for Best Picture, Best Director, Emerald Fennell, who is a woman. She's one of the women, there's several women being nominated for Best Director. Also Best Screenplay, Original Screenplay by Fennell, and then Best Actress for Carey Mulligan. I think Carey Mulligan actually has a shot at this one. It's a fantastically done movie that is meant to hold up a mirror to society in terms of rape culture, in terms of things that happen, and even just how you look at that act and how you look at the crime has changed even just in the last 10 years, let alone when I was in college. I went to college in the early 90s, and at that time, people were just getting an awareness of date rape and acquaintance rape. That didn't even exist as a term 20 years before that, because the assumption was if you went out with somebody or you're at a party, this was not some guy sneaking into your home and attacking you. And I think over the years, the human race and America, but not just America, this is all over, needs to look at itself and the nature of consent with women and what men do and the things that a lot of men are capable of, even when they don't think they're capable of it or don't even recognize that they're doing it, which is kind of horrifying when you look at it. And Promising Young Woman is brilliantly done because the approach is done as an exploitation film. It feels like one of those movies from the 70s of the cheerleader or the babysitter who goes crazy and attacks. What's the movie Knock Knock that it was originally based on? I forget the name of what that was, but you know, that was a movie from the 70s of, be careful of the willing vixens because they're going to come after you. It's done like that exploitation sex thriller, but it really has a very specific point to make, and it doesn't shy away from it. And this is not a complaint. It's you don't all these people are going to be, I don't want to see an overly woke film. Let me tell you something. Most films have some sort of message to them, or at the least have a moralistic code that they are applying to the movie. And this one is definitely out there to make a point, but it does it in such a way, and it does it in such a sort of a, it's very alluring as a picture. It seems to be drawing you in with this attractiveness, but then you realize there's something really ugly going on in the movie. And it's something that I think we need to still address as a society and change, because there's a lot of people that still do this. And there's an entire segment of the male population that is out there just waiting for a chance to get the girl who maybe isn't quite got all of her faculties, and then maybe you can have a good time that night. And that still goes on constantly. And it's horrifying when you break it down in a clinical way. Now, the movie itself is fantastically done. It was one of the better movies of last year and one of the best of award seasons. Carey Mulligan does a fantastic job in the role. The Blu-ray comes with a couple things. It's got a director's commentary, which is always nice. And then it's got three background behind the scenes stories that just deconstruct the development of the movie and the approach to some of the characters. I think the biggest thing I took away from that was Emerald Fennell described making the movie as a candy store. You wanted it to look very inviting and fun, sort of like an old fashioned candy shop, and because it's brightly colored and, you know, she's eating a candy can at one point, and there's a lot of candy background, but then you realize you're in something, you know, like you're in the witch's house that Hansel and Gretel got stuck in. And it's a very meticulously done movie, very poignant, and sadly very relevant to stuff that goes on today. So I'm going to have to say the Blu-ray for Promising Young Woman totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Also available this week include News of the World, which we'll talk about in more depth next week, Soul, Godzilla in 4K, Batman vs. Superman in 4K, Gattaca in 4K, and one of my favorite films from the 90s, Event Horizon, on a new Blu-ray from Shout Factory. And that's it. I need to go. When I come back next week, I'm going to be talking about Godzilla vs. Kong, French Exit, and The Unholy. Until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.